Welcome to episode 119 of the Microsoft Cloud IT Pro Podcast, recorded live March 29, 2019. This is a show about Office 365, Azure, and the IT Pro and end user side of life, where we discuss a topic or recent news related to Office 365 or Azure and how it relates to you as an IT Pro. Today, we mix things up a bit with technology is easy and talk about how technology is only a part of the equation. How are you, Scott? Do you have coffee?
Fully energized? I have coffee, I have new AirPods, and I have an electric skateboard. Life's good.
Can you do all three at the same time?
Coffee? Yeah, I probably could. It's actually a really smooth ride. I definitely do wear the AirPods when I'm on there, and a selfie stick with a camera on the end are doable as well, so maybe a cup of coffee. If it wasn't in like a tumbler, like a Yeti or something, absolutely.
Then you could do a straw, like a Yeti with a straw.
I could. That would be highly professional looking.
Absolutely. You should do that and take a selfie while you're doing it. Broadcast it live while you're drinking coffee on an electric skateboard, listening to your AirPods.
Yep. What could go wrong? Yeah. I'll be sitting there on my YouTube channel. Just like and subscribe as you watch me on the way to the hospital.
Oh, the entertainment. So we're going to do a different episode today, I think.
Excellent.
We have no idea
Excellent.
How this is going to go. We're going to kind of wing it. We were sitting here chatting about a topic before the podcast, and we were comparing training versus consulting, because you do a lot of the training stuff, developing courseware. I do a lot of the consulting, and actually how those different roles equate to coming up with podcast topics, which led us into the discussion of how, as a consultant, a lot of times, because I made the comment, sometimes I'm just doing a bunch of random stuff for clients, and it doesn't let me really focus on a topic like training does. Which you made the comment, technology is easy, people just don't want to do it. Which I was like, this could be interesting, because I also have some thoughts around this, and especially the evolution of IT and how it's changed for IT pros over the last couple of years.
Yeah.
Mover is a cloud migration company that specializes in moving your company's files from file servers or cloud storage like Box, Dropbox, and Google into Office 365. Their patented technology makes Mover the fastest OneDrive file migrator in the world. Moving dozens of terabytes of data a day is a breeze. Use Mover's free, industry-leading migration guides or ask for a managed migration and they'll take the lead. With Mover, all your data is secure and intact. Running completely behind the scenes, you don't lose time, money, or hair while you transfer. Scan, plan, migrate, report. Migrations that don't suck with Mover. Visit mover.io for more info.
Let's get into it. I was having a conversation with a couple of folks earlier this week, and we were talking about just general approach to technology. And it was actually a couple of folks who are in consulting. And, you know, the way I like to think about it is, let's do the general project manager thing, right? Where we throw up that three-legged stool and we say, we've got maybe people, process, and technology. So technology, when I say it's easy, I don't mean, you know, there's not work involved with it along the way. But for the most part, say we're implementing a product and you and I live in Microsoft land, there is documentation that we can follow. The documentation might not be 100% correct. It might not have caught up with the current release, things like that. But generally speaking, you can muddle your way through a step-by-step guide that says, step one, do this. Step two, do this. Step three, do this. So that's kind of one leg of our stool. And then I tend to look at those other legs, like I said, as just people and process. And when we implement technology, well, generally we're talking about changing some type of process, which then affects the people. So there's all sorts of hesitation there. And we're really yanking one of those legs out of the chair because we have to rip it out and then kind of rebuild it and put it back in to make all those things successful along the way. And then I think it's super interesting when we talk about, like you said, that difference between maybe training and the consultative side of life, because there are things in consulting where you bring expertise as a consultant. And I don't want to discount that, you know, with the technology is easy thing, because there's definitely a skill set that's there. And there are some things that clients could do for themselves where they just opt not to. They don't have the in-house skill or the expertise, the person who's willing to read that step-by-step guide, or, you know, they just want to pay somebody else to do it. And that might be born out of, we want it done better, faster, whatever it is. It could even be, we want somebody else to blame. Right? There's been a lot of projects that I've worked on over my career where I've been both on the purchasing side, so the one who's bringing consultants in, and been on the consultative side where I've been going in as the consultant for that engagement. And I certainly understand that sometimes as a consultant, you're walking into a minefield, and sometimes the people on the other side are bringing you in just so you can prove a point, be the one that's right, be the one that's wrong, whatever it happens to be.
Yeah, no, I was in the same boat. So I did consulting for a lot of years, and then I went to work for a company for about a year and a half or so before I went back into consulting. And it was really interesting in that time frame to be on both sides of the house, like you said, with consulting and hiring consultants. Because when I was a consultant, I was the one that people paid to come in and help talk them through it, give them advice, walk them through how to build SharePoint farms, how to architect on-prem farms. And then I got this job as a full-time employee, and they were going to go through some of the SharePoint upgrades, building a new farm. So I walked through it all, and they were like, no, let's bring in a consultant to verify all of this and give us advice. And I'm like, wait a minute. I was a consultant before this. You hired me from being a consultant to come on full-time to tell you exactly what I was telling you as a consultant. But now that I'm a full-time employee, we still need consultants to verify everything. And it's an interesting dichotomy of how you end up in those different positions, and how, for whatever reason, sometimes there's just this level of comfort when a consultant tells you something, but also understanding that the consultants are not always right either.
Yeah, and that's where I go back to, sometimes you either need to the consultant to push or validate it an idea for you, whether your idea as the one who's making the purchasing decision to bring in that consultant is right or wrong. You know, you might even make your selection of a consultant based on who agrees with you and brings it in. So it's, you know, it can be for validation, and it's also a little bit real world, right? It's a little bit of the blame game down the other side. So let's do the CYA thing, make sure our rear ends are 100% covered and the flap isn't open. And we've got a way to dig ourselves out of the hole that we're putting ourselves in. And I'm not saying it's like that in every engagement, but there are certainly engagements that are like that, you know, where you walk in and you pretty much know, like, I'm either here to be the fall person or I'm here to be the hero. And then there's all that stuff in the middle where it's just run-of-the-mill, kind of middle of the road, just get it done. It's the stuff that customers can't or don't want to do themselves. It's a healthy mix of both.
Yeah. And I've been in one of those projects lately, and it is. The whole technology is easy. It's interesting because one of the projects I've been working on lately has been that migration from a SharePoint 2007 environment to SharePoint Online. And it, I mean, that's a big jump. There is definitely some knowledge, some understanding that I have from doing SharePoint for so long, but nothing about it is inherently hard. It's not saying somebody could come in, or I could go get my 10-year-old kid or my grandma to go do it. You obviously have to have some technology background, but at the end of the day, the hardest part for me wasn't the technology aspect. It wasn't building out some of the functionality in SharePoint Online, doing some of the workflow stuff. It was actually understanding some of that business process and what the client actually wanted at the end of the day once it got into SharePoint Online. Because there's some changes, there's some things, especially around workflow. So the biggest piece of this was a bunch of workflows, SharePoint 2007 workflows into Logic apps. I think we spent the most time trying to figure out what the 2007 workflows looked like and what the business process and what was going on under the covers there. But then after that, it's just following a bunch of documentation on how to set up different Logic apps, how to use different actions, some of that type of stuff. It's, yeah, I don't know if that makes sense or not. I'm kind of thinking out loud as I'm talking through this.
No, you hit the, you know, that weird inflection point where even within consulting, and perhaps you as an individual consultant and an individual contributor back into your own company, where you really do hit, you've built yourself a little miniature factory, and that's almost where you want other people to come in. Like, okay, I've solved the problem, and now we have this repeatable process to go ahead and make it happen. And then you're just into the day-to-day kind of wear me down, right? You're just grinding the gears of saying like, okay, I figured it out. But really the problem, the thing that we do to solve it is just do this, rinse, repeat, do this, rinse, repeat, do this, yeah. rinse, repeat. And that's certainly a grinding thing too, right? When you sit back and face some of that. And that's eased a little bit, I think, in some other consultancies where you have varying levels of skill sets, where you might have an architect or a designer or someone come in who can kind of lay that foundation of here's the strategy. Maybe not the entire design, but here's a little bit of strategy, have somebody else back in with the design, and then have others back in with the actual implementation of that design and refine that implementation as you go through it.
Yeah, and even in technology, I still remember a story somebody told me once, and I feel like this is becoming more and more true in technology, and in my head, this still rings true with the technology as easy as, and it wasn't even a story about technology, so it's like, hey, Scott, your water softener breaks, your water heater, it's not working. You call somebody to come in and fix it. He walks in the door with a hammer, hits the hot water heater, everything starts working, and like walks out of the house 5 minutes later. You get an invoice the next day for $150. And you're like, the guy was only here for 5 minutes. What did he do? Why is this so expensive? So you call him, you ask him to send you an itemized detailed list of why it was $150, and he sends you back an invoice and it says $10 for the 5 minutes I was there, $140 for knowing where to hit with the hammer.
Yep.
And I think that's true a lot in technology, because people will pay us to do things too that I feel are repetitive. It's like, you know what, I have done this 500 times, but I can do it in 5 minutes because I know exactly how to do it because I've done it 500 times. So I think from that perspective, again, it's easy. Some people just don't want to do it. I do the same thing with my lawn. I can mow my own lawn. I know how to use a lawnmower, a weed whacker, an edger. Frankly, I just don't want to do it. So I pay somebody to do it. And I have no problem with that. And I'm in Florida and it's hot and it's miserable in the summertime. And I have absolutely no desire to be outside. Again, mowing the lawn is easy. I just don't want to do it. Some of the Office 365 stuff is easy. Some of my clients do literally pay me. They're like, I don't want to figure it out. Or I know how to do it, but I just don't have time. My focus, my expertise is on selling real estate or on working in the oil and gas industry, or it's manufacturing. My expertise is not technology. So I just want to pay somebody else to do it because frankly, I just don't want to think about it. I don't have to worry about it. I just want somebody else to go do it for me.
Now, if only, you know, that person that you hire can get it done and get it to where it needs to be. You know, like in my case, I'm exactly the opposite. Like I live in Florida, right? I'm only like 20 minutes away from you. And I don't mind mowing my lawn and running the weed whacker and things like that. In fact, sometimes I'll take that as like my lunch break to go outside and do the yard and clear my head and just sweat a little bit and get a little bit of exercise and, you know, kind of put my head in a different space to break out of that mold of doing the technology thing all the time. Or thinking about some of the other things that just come up day to day. Like you need ways to get yourself out of that headspace as well, which helps with some of that repetition in there. You know, like I mentioned the skateboard thing. So yep. I like to go out at lunchtime and take the dogs for a run on the skateboard sometimes. Like we'll go out for half an hour or an hour, and rather than eating lunch, I'll just go do that kind of thing. So one of the motivations even for getting like the electric skateboard was like, I can't run as far as the stupid dogs can sometimes. So, you know, hey, this thing's got like 10 miles of range, so we can actually go for a decent 6 mile at a light jogging pace for them kind of thing, just to keep them moving through it. And the Florida heat certainly contributes to that. Like, I don't want to go for a 6 mile run in Florida. That sounds crazy.
Yeah. So is that how you got that 14 miles an 14 mile an hour max speed I saw pop up on your route you took the other day? Or were you actually running?
Oh, no. That was skateboarding.
I was like, wow, Scott started running and he's going like 14, 15 miles an hour. Look at him
yeah,
go.
Yeah, no. And that's the slow mode on that thing. So I don't see myself going much faster than that. And just to clarify, like when I'm with the dogs, it's not going 14 miles an hour. Like we are going very, very slow and me just being nice and lazy and getting used to the controls.
Got it. Upskillity is disrupting cloud training as we know it with their on-demand platform, SkillMeUp. Their new design focuses on a user flow to better support role-based learning paths with these great new features. Real-time, hands-on labs are now included with each subscription to build your skills competence. Hundreds of cloud courses with more added daily to transform your skills for today's cloud-first careers. Role-based learning paths guide you through associated level courses in an easy-to-view layout and tracker. Microsoft Azure and Microsoft 365 certification prep courses and labs to support you leading up to exam day. Learn more and start your free 3-day trial at www.skillmeup.com. So another topic kind of in this realm that popped up when you said technology is easy. And I was thinking about this. You and I were both down in live at Live 360. I can't remember if we talked about this in an earlier episode or not. So if we did, sorry, you're going to hear it again. But we were down there and we were sitting on a panel talking about the change of roles is for IT pros. And I was on a podcast earlier at Ignite where I got interviewed by Chris McNulty and Mark Cashman for their IntroZone podcast. And they asked me a question about the biggest skill that IT pros need going forward. And then I said PowerShell. I think PowerShell is a great technology skill, but I was thinking about it at the time. My head was in technology. I was thinking technology. We sat on this panel a couple months later and talked about the changing role again. And I changed my mind about the biggest skill that IT pros need going forward. And I think this is across all technologies. I've talked to developers. Developers claim they've been doing this for 10 years. Maybe it's true. I don't know. A developer can confirm it. But the one word that I think of now when I think of technology, and I don't know how this plays into technology is easy, but we'll kind of think through it, is adaptability. Is you can't go learn a technology like you used to maybe 20 years ago and have it be relevant for 5, 10, 15 years. Some of the things, maybe, I mean, IPv4 addresses and subnets haven't changed in a really long time, but there is a lot of stuff I was doing 10 years ago in technology that I don't even touch today because of how much it's changed. Whether it's switching from writing command prompts, batch scripts to writing PowerShell, whether it's storing files on a file server versus now in the cloud, or even as an IT pro, sometimes in GitHub or some source control because it's files for Azure that I want to source, that I want to have source control on, or PowerShell scripts I want to source control on. But I feel like more and more so, being an IT pro isn't necessarily, and maybe this is how it fits in, it's not as much about the knowledge that you have as much as it is about being able to quickly adapt the knowledge that you have as technology is changing.
So there's a whole bunch to unpack in that one. And working for a learning partner and a training company, I might have a little bit of a whitewashed view on it or a certain spin just based on what I'm exposed to day to day. Even thinking about how we might approach customers, I think really what we're talking about and what you're getting to at the heart is we think about maybe ourselves or reaching out to our customers and things like that. We talk a lot about things like reskill and retrain. So maybe let's take that person who was really good at writing batch scripts on-prem, or they're really good at bash or something like that, and retrain them to go ahead and maybe learn PowerShell or this new form of automation. And they might not like it, right? It might not be in their wheelhouse or things like that, but there's always going to be somebody who it is in their wheelhouse and they want to do it. So that's one way that we can kind of look towards it and think about it. And I think that's a good way to maybe think about it from an organizational perspective, right? From the organizational side, we want people to grow. We want them to be reskilled, put into new positions where they can excel and grow from there. When we think individually about it, really we're talking about not reskilling. I think a good way to phrase it, and there's a couple articles I'll put in the show notes about this, is think about upskilling yourself. Like, you are making yourself more marketable to, as you acquire these skills and you're able to get out there and learn new things. And we have this volume of information that comes at us these days. So there's all sorts of studies out there about things like how humans retain information, how well we're able to retain it over time, when do we push information out of our head, and really where's that curve or inflection point for when we forget something because we had to learn something new and push it in there. It's a really weird, interesting place to be. When I'm in industry and when I've been in industry, I like to think about it as kind of reskilling, you know, my team and my part of the organization. And I hope individually people can review that as upskilling themselves, you know, and making themselves more marketable. Because potentially I, as a manager on a team or somebody who runs a team or a product or a part of an organization, I should be able to get something tangible out of those individuals. And they walk away with this tangible skill, which they might keep with me, they might take someplace else. Like, that's all well, and that's good, right? People need to kind of grow and get on to the next thing if they need to. And that's never a bad thing. I've been in some organizations where we look at that inflection point of folks don't know the technology, so we need to get them trained up on it really quickly, or we look to automate our way out of it, right? We might look towards not the people side of it, but we might actually look to technology as a 100% like harbinger of all things good. And that'll be our savior within that. And I think that's not a great way to look at it, because lots of places you go, they might talk about things like work reduction, or, you know, people are afraid that their jobs are going to go away. It's not that your job goes away. It's that your job changes, right? And yep. I talk about this a lot, like in trainings, when we introduce IT pros to PaaS concepts. So we might get in and say, okay, here's a service, like bring it back to Azure real quick. So here's a service in Azure, right? We need to deploy web applications. So IT pros, you've been used to standing up Apache and IIS, or maybe running up Docker hosts and configuring container runtimes, things like that. If I take that part of your job away, so, you know, say we go to a PaaS service where it's all managed for us, the platform is already there. You don't need to deploy IIS or Apache or Docker anymore. That doesn't mean that you have less time in your day. You're probably going to spend the same amount of time, if not more, just keeping up with what the platform's doing and how it's moving along and where it's going with things. You know, so for example, again, Azure Web Apps, they're constantly updating the frameworks that drive that platform. So when there's an update to PHP or Python or something like that, well, the whole underlying operating system is going to be updated. So you need to know that, need to make sure you communicate with developers, they're keeping applications up to date, all those kinds of things. So I don't look, like, I find like tactical work reduction and words like that to be a little bit scary because people think they're losing their jobs. It's really, we're shifting the work. We want to reskill the organization and upskill individuals within there.
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. And I don't have any full-time employees yet. I have a few contractors that have done some stuff for me here and there, but I've always said if I would start bringing on people to help me out, or if I was in that employee, in an employer situation, especially in technology, I would not necessarily be looking for the skills you have now. It would be something that would play into account. But what I would be the most concerned about is what you just described, your ability to upscale to, in 2 months from now, 3 months from now, learn something new, to be able to adapt as the technology changes and continue to upskill yourself and have that desire to upskill yourself and always be learning. Because that is one thing about technology that I think it probably is harder for some people is not the technology, but the always learning. I feel like there's never a day that goes by lately that I don't learn something new. I'm not having to figure something new out. On the Office 365 center, Office 365 side, the message center lately is a perfect example. I was talking to somebody else the other day, and just out of curiosity, I went back and counted how many messages popped up in my message center about changes in my tenant, about new features, about things I need to take into consideration in the last 3 months. So January 1 until now March 29. It was over 100 messages that popped up over the last 90 days of things going on within my Office 365 tenant that I at least had to be aware of. That's over one a day. There are a lot of changes going on. And my job sometimes isn't so much rolling out technology as understanding those changes, understanding how they impact the business, and knowing what we need to do, what we need to plan for, what we need to disable, what we need to know is going to change in a few months and plan for it. Based on those messages, those changes, and how Office 365 is changing. It's not the, hey, go learn SharePoint 2016 and that knowledge will be relevant for 3 years until 2019 comes out anymore.
I think to a certain degree, it might actually be that case, but you need to learn to be a little bit more adaptable. And I don't want anybody to think that I'm saying like, hey, you've got to become this kind of jack of all trades and master of none. I think the new reality is you're still allowed to be a master in certain places. Like if you're really good at SharePoint on-prem, that's awesome. Like go ahead and continue to be and keep that your kind of domain expertise there. That's fine. But you have to be willing to spread out and become the jack of all trades for all these other things on the side. And I think that's kind of the new reality that we sit in as we look at Office 365 or going to the public cloud or some of these new private cloud implementations. Like just like you said, the pace of technology is an interesting thing. So you might not be an expert in the latest and greatest thing. That's okay. You've just got to be willing to learn it and retain your expertise and your existing stuff and then grow out from there a little bit. And typically when I've been in charge of, you know, hiring for my teams, that's really what I'm looking for is that desire to learn new things. So cool, you've got this great expertise in this core skill for this thing that we need within this organization. That's good. Like bring that expertise in because you can drive that yourself. Potentially you can drive that through consultants, whatever it happens to be, maybe be able to call them out on their BS if there is BS there, or improve their designs, right? And work together in tandem. But I also really need you to be willing to pick up the ball over here, over here, over here, and not be an expert in those things, but just know enough to be dangerous. So you can help us get to where we need to be organizationally, because we'll drive technology through that people and process side of things, right? Like technology is just an enabler for those other two legs of the stool.
Yep. When it comes to email, Outlook and Office 365 are fantastic. But sometimes there are things you'd like to do that aren't implemented. Sperry Software creates Outlook add-ins and Office 365 services that fill in these gaps. For instance, there are Outlook add-ins to automatically print emails and/or attachments, save emails to PDF, send out recurring emails, or how about a warning when you're going to do a reply to all instead of a normal reply? Find these and many more email productivity solutions. Get started today by visiting www.sperrysoftware.com/cloudIT. Going back to Office 365, I think that core and then being able to pick up those side things too really comes into play with how stuff is integrated. I think about the stuff like the data loss prevention and the, now I'm drawing a blank, the AIP, the Azure Information Protection, some of those technologies that used to maybe apply to one stack where now they expand, and DLP, for instance, covers Teams, SharePoint, Exchange, all of that. If you're an Exchange expert and you have some knowledge in DLP and you're a SharePoint expert and you have some knowledge in DLP, there's some overlap there. And being able to work together, two of those people in different silos with some of those technologies that span everything and expand your knowledge or expertise into some of those other areas, especially where there's some overlap, is super important.
Yeah, there's I doubt I could go back and pull it up at this point, but there were a couple of folks on Twitter a couple of weeks ago kind of debating how to build out a center of excellence for Office 365 and who should own Office 365 as a service. Should it be the SharePoint folks? Should it be the Exchange folks? Should it be the unified communications personnel who have been working through that? And what does that look like? And in reality, it's probably all three. Like in a perfect world, that's where we'd want you to be. Because again, you have domain expertise in an area. Like if you're really good at Exchange, you can know enough about SharePoint to be dangerous, but we probably don't want you configuring that stack. But you need to contribute to the conversation. And it was funny to see a lot of the SharePoint folks come in and kind of land in the space. Well, you know, the SharePoint people should run it because they're the collaborators and they understand the process side of things and what the people in the organization are doing. Well, Office 365 is really a technology product, right? It's the enabler for all the things. So SharePoint might not be the best place to start. Like I might actually want to start with Exchange folks who understand core concepts like resiliency and high availability and kind of running those services. Because if you run email on-prem at scale, SharePoint was kind of a wacky product, but email was even wackier and you've got different standards and all those kinds of things. Like there might be a little bit more rigor kind of in that process. And then eventually you get to that good place where maybe it is a center of excellence and it is all three of these people or one person who serves those multiple roles, right? It doesn't always have to be a bunch of different people. You know, you could have somebody who is your developer and your DevOps engineer or your architect and your implementer as well. Like you could be a smaller org, right? That's a reality as well.
Yeah, we'll have to go find that Twitter thread because I saw the same one and it was entertaining. I mean, let's face it, SharePoint people are awesome. We were both SharePoint people. We're full of ourselves, but I agree. It's not always the SharePoint people that should be running your Office 365 implementation. And it was really interesting to see that debate go back and forth about who should administer the Office 365 stack within our organization. So yeah, good chat. That was interesting.
Yeah, always fun.
Yes, especially when we don't necessarily know where we're going when we start.
I only went through one cup of coffee, so.
I got through about half of my cup, so now it's time to go refill and get some energy because I told my wife this morning I have about 40 hours of work to get done in the next 4 hours. So I will let you know how that goes.
Excellent.
I'll probably be in a bad mood by the end of the day. And then my wife told me if you go into that mindset, you're going to be in a bad mood by the end of the day.
Well, it's more that you carry the bad mood into the weekend, so, you know, let it go.
Yes. Hey, my tournament, my brackets are still doing well, and I can maintain my bragging rights over my family as of yet, so maybe that'll help my weekend. We'll see. All right, go enjoy your skateboard, coffee, and earbuds, and we will talk to you next week, Scott.
Thanks, Ben.
If you enjoyed the podcast, go leave us a 5-star rating in iTunes. It helps to get the word out so more IT pros can learn about Office 365 and Azure. If you have any questions you want us to address on the show or feedback about the show, feel free to reach out via our website, Twitter, or Facebook. Thanks again for listening and have a great day.